Hello and welcome to episode 59 of HardcoreGaming101.net's top 47,858 games of all time podcast, where we objectively, definitively, and scientifically rank the games you nominate. My name is Xerxes, and that's right, Zach, I do see the parallels between Zero the Kamikaze Squirrel and Sonic the Hedgehog. Shadow the Hedgehog. It's hard. Just saying Shadow's name, it just...
I know, it's, why did they make it the same? Yeah.
I just don't want to do it, so I'm not going to. My panelists today are...
I'm Bob Nader.
I'm Carl.
The Gunholtz signing in.
And I'm Danny from Retro Pals.
And I'm Alex from Retro Pals.
Yay! It's great to have our buddies, the Retro Pals themselves here. Good to have you, boys.
Yeah, great to be here. Love the show.
Yeah, it's great.
And we're all huge fans of your stuff, too, so it's been really great to have you here.
Why don't you just introduce yourselves really quickly, not just say your names, but like say where people can find the Retro Pals and your work and what you do.
Hi, I'm Danny from Retro Pals. We are on YouTube and Twitch as Retro Pals.
We are also on Twitter at Retro Pals, twitter.com/RetroPalsHQ, and Patreon at patreon.com/RetroPalsHQ.
We play old games and we have fun.
We have a lot of fun with old games. I think that gets the point across clearly, correct? Yeah.
I think that covers it, yeah. Yeah. Like, comment, subscribe.
Exactly.
On this podcast, we have three rules. Rule one, all rankings are final, official, and scientifically accurate. Rule two, you can nominate one game at a time via five-star review on iTunes or Stitcher. That's the fast-track way. But for the month of July 2017, we're actually accepting nominations via Twitter. You can nominate one additional game via Twitter. Just hit me up and try to use the hashtag top47k to make sure I can find it if I lose track of it later. Rule three, you can nominate games that have already been nominated, just don't nominate games we've already ranked. See for yourself which games have been nominated and which games have been ranked by checking out the master list, bit.ly/47kgames. That's bit.ly/47kgames. Okay, the next game we're going to be talking about is Sonic the Hedgehog. No, not that Sonic the Hedgehog. A different Sonic the Hedgehog. Sonic the Hedgehog that was released on November 14th, 2006 for the Xbox 360. It was nominated by @null_0x00_.
Also known as the greatest criminal to nominate a game thus far.
Yeah, it looks like it's like a throwback to Leet speak, but it doesn't pronounce it. It doesn't create anything. It just like, is it an ASCII? I don't know. It doesn't matter. Great screen name, though. Who put it on a five-star Stitcher review, which is why we're doing it now so quickly. This game was developed by Sonic Team and published by Sega, again, for the Xbox 360.
Can you hit me with those purveyors of quality?
Those purveyors of quality, Sonic Team.
Yeah.
Oh, it's been a long time since I've done that.
I know.
Those purveyors of quality. Is that how that's how I say it, right?
Yeah, you got to put in,
I feel like you should just take over. Like, so what do we want to say about this one? Like, you actually had to hunt this down because it's almost as if people don't want us to play this game anymore.
No, I tried to buy it in secondhand shops, and it wasn't that.
It's funny you should say that, because didn't Sega actually have a thing where they took the low-reviewing games off the shelves?
They did delist on, I think, Xbox and possibly the PlayStation. All of their games... especially the Sonic games, I think it was specifically, that were below 50% on Metacritic or something. You know, they took them off. They said, nope, these are bad for the Sonic brand. We're taking them off.
It's kind of shocking that doesn't happen more often.
And nothing could have been worse for the Sonic brand than this title file.
Well, yeah. It's like, it's good that they delisted games that people shouldn't be buying, but they also sold 800,000 copies of Sonic 06, so...
This game was like one of their platinum sellers or anything.
Yep, it was released as a platinum hit. Platinum. A platinum family hit at that. They wanted to sell this to kids.
To be fair, it did come shipped with a prepaid postage bubble wrapped envelope to the nearest landfill. So
very.
It's not like they, it's not like they didn't have consumers' best interest in mind. Now, I mean, look.
This is a great game for kids, because if they don't know any better, they'll be like, I guess this is fun. I guess I'm enjoying it.
Astonishing how much staying power the Sonic character has as a character, in that like even like little kids these days know who Sonic is, yet they have no games to play.
Well, they can play Sonic Boom.
Well, okay, right, but like it's like the character has outlived the games, in a sense. Like, they keep making the games, because I guess they have to, but like the character is more successful than...
Like the Mario games, Sonic as a... icon and is just like, you know, parents go to a shop and they go to a shop and they're like, I'm buying a game for my child. That's that Blue Hedgehog thing. I know that's for kids. I'm buying it. And that's it. That's the whole exchange. The kids end up with the game whether they want it or not.
I think kids still like Sonic.
Oh, no, they
do. I feel like there's something that is attractive to kids in a way that about Sonic that it just will always be interesting to them as long as it's around. It's kind of like, I mean, we had this discussion when we talked about Pac-Man, how Pac-Man just like exists forever, even though like nobody can name the last Pac-Man game they played for the most part. Except for me, because
they're all just called Pac-Man, just some variant of the word Pac-Man.
Yeah, you'd be hot. Pac-Man Championship DX, Pac-Man Championship Plus DX, Pac-Man Championship Plus Plus DX Plus Revision 2, colon, third mix.
Well, because Sonic 06 is actually impressive, because it really is quite close to, I think, the ultimate Sonic, that sort of aimed at kids experience, because it is, you know, it's got Sonic, but they also have Shadow, and the kids love Shadow because he's hard edged and cool and doesn't have
a. He has a gun for the children.
Look,
I don't think Shadow had a gun in this game, at least. No, right?
Did he not have a gun in the? He had a gun in this,
but he drives around in cars and hovercrafts, and he's all like, "Yeah, I'm the fastest hedgehog on wheels." And
no gun, but he had this butterfly knife, and he kept showing it off, like kind of thing. It's really, I don't know. It's kind of seedy.
And then, franchise, they introduced Silver, who is the ultimate cool hedgehog because he has psychic powers and he is from the future where it's all apocalypse. And I don't know, kids eat that up as well.
Kids love the end of the world.
Yeah.
They love God's the end of the world. It's great.
As a kid, as a boy who grew up in the early 90s and read X-Men comics, I can tell you that, yes, this is true. What I loved most was dudes with gigantic guns, muscles that were actually bigger than the guns they carried, really tiny ankles, and they came from the future.
Yeah,
those image comics, huh?
Do you know? You know what else kids love though?
What
kids love? Dragon Ball Z, and Silver is basically Trunks.
Yep, that's it.
I mean, stealing from DBZ and new to Sonic, but they really kind of got blatant again with this.
And he goes back in time to kill Sonic, and that is the twist. That's the hook.
So, first thing we can really notice about this game is the fact that there are probably early access scams on Steam that are better put together than this mess.
Mm-hmm.
It's so broken, every part of it. Last inch of it is busted.
The engine just doesn't work half the time. It's really...
It's honestly kind of impressive.
It is.
Anything
it's kind
you
of
do
amazing.
In the game risks breaking it in some horrible way, or at least Sonic dying.
I think they were, literally reusing code from the Dreamcast, and it just can't hold together anymore.
Because I don't think it's reused, because there are things in the Dreamcast games that work that don't work in this game, which is crazy.
Look at that sorry mess of a particle effect when you use the homing attack.
We might be getting ahead of ourselves here. Like, we gotta get into, like, first of all, I gotta, like, remind me again, like, is Shadow the Hedgehog the same thing as, like, the weird robot hedgehog from Sonic CD?
No, that's Metal Sonic.
Yeah.
Okay. There's two different Metal Sonics.
And there are two different Metal Sonics. I may have played a lot of Sonic CD as a child.
All right, then I guess what I'm saying is I have no idea what's going on in this game.
Shadow was introduced in the last kind of very well-received Sonic game before very recent times. That was Sonic Adventure 2.
Dr. Robotnik's Mean Bee Machine?
Oh. Yeah, that was actually not well-received. Actually, I think it was okay. People like that because Puyo Puyo is a good game, but... Okay, so yeah, he should have died in that game, and he just kept coming back because the kids love him. Who knew that kids love guys that dress in black and are angry about everything? But they have him. He's back because he was in his game with where he had a gun, and that's Shadow the Hedgehog, so the self-titled game. I don't really know what he's doing back in this one because he just kind of hangs out, but...
He's the Vegeta of the Sonic franchise.
Doing nothing, going nowhere, dude. This place is... bogus. Go cut myself.
Because the plot of this game is ridiculous, and it's very hard to describe because it is not... It doesn't follow on from the games before it, because for some reason they now live in Solana, and there's a princess, a very infamous princess, but that's a non-issue. The existence of the princess is just, like, side garbage to the main inferno that is this whole affair.
The princess is the face of everything wrong with the game, but that doesn't even begin to describe what's wrong with this game.
And so she's a human princess, right?
Yes, human princess.
Like, not even like a like super deformed human, like a regular looking, like...
Like, she steps out of a square unit scheme.
Whole intro is just straight, like, you could have watched the first, I don't know, like, what, like, a minute or 2 minutes of the intro, you wouldn't pick it as a Sonic game. Because it's just a parade and a princess and guys in hoods and explosions, and it's like, oh, yeah. Okay.
The problem is they took an art style that's, like, way more realistic than a Sonic game should really be.
Well, what they did was, and I think this is confirmed in the, well, there's two things. Firstly, they took a game that wasn't Sonic in the concept stages and made it into a Sonic game. But also they went, the power of the Xbox 360 will allow us to have realistic graphics like never before. And that was, of course, the stupidest thing that they could have started their Sonic the Hedgehog game, sort of art treatment with. Because even though the worlds themselves, even the levels are pretty flat and boring in a lot of cases, you know, Sonic's worlds have always been vibrant and colorful and full of, like, interesting abstractions and things. And these are just realistic places, and they fall flat over and over in pretty much every stage.
Yeah, they were trying to do something new and completely different while they were still coming to grips with new hardware. And they had the need to shovel in this Havoc physics engine and make it come into play all the time.
And, yeah, they... Wow, you know, I think I read reviews that had said this at some point, but it was like, you know, this game irrefutably proves that you cannot make a game purely on the Havoc physics engine.
Yeah, what's interesting with the game is that the demo versions of it have different physics when it comes to jumping and homing than the final version, and in many cases, the different physics is actually much, much better than the final version of the game.
Yeah, they kept retooling it months up until the release, and then they were just like, whatever, this is as good as we got.
Yeah,
go buy
they
it.
had a very strict deadline to meet, and there was no time to...
I gotta say, for a game like this, it seems like the last thing you'd want to be doing is changing the physics, like, right before release, because that changes the entire game.
Mm-hmm.
That's
the thing you want to nail before you really even start making the game in earnest. Like, you kind of want to make sure that you know, okay, this is how the character moves. Now let's build a game around that, right? Like, that's how every 3D platform, well, all the good ones were built.
Let me throw out the defense, and this is not a you should spend your money on the game, but just apparently there are a couple of things that happened behind the scenes. As was said, they had a deadline agreed with Microsoft that it had to be out when the game came out. You know, that was a hard deadline between Sega and Microsoft. So I guess Sega could not bump this out any further. So they were locked into that. And for some reason, because I guess Sega thought, this isn't hard enough, let's really challenge the team who are using new hardware that they don't understand. Let's split the team in half and then remove them and make one half of the team make Wii games and keep the second half making the game that requires a full team to make with an extremely short deadline.
Yep, sounds great. Let's do it like halfway through development too, just to keep people on their toes.
Yeah, because that way they've scoped a game for the full team and there's no time to shrink it. That's the problem, I think, when you approach this game in terms of criticizing a game, because I think about 95% of the problems in this game are just, they didn't finish that.
Do you want to know the cherry on top, though?
You can still criticize it. Like, we're not criticizing the people who made it. I'm not saying,
the game definitely sucks.
About this game,
like, yeah,
it's
like,
going to be...
Takashi Nishimoto, you suck!
By the way, do you want to know what, like,
those tree textures are garbage?
They are.
No, I mean, it's like, no, it's, you're talking about the game itself. If the game is a heaping pile of trash, then it is. It doesn't matter why it is. I mean, it's interesting to know why it is.
It doesn't. Bob, I'm going to let you finish, though.
Apparently, like, they actually told their testers that they just weren't allowed to complain anymore because they weren't going to do anything about it or something similar to that effect.
That's the modern game development strategy, actually. I think Ubisoft's been taking pages from that.
It kind of is, yeah. It looks forward to the whole rush development, just corporate suits deciding things that they have no say in. Just, yeah. Every rush game can look back at Sonic 06 as a template to follow.
That's weird. Wow, imagine looking at it as a template.
Yeah, how to make a rushed game.
Usually when you hear these stories about games that are like, they had a deadline set, like, we've got a hard deadline. It's like, it's a serious deadline. We got to make it. Like, the solution to that is to say, okay, here's the game. Why don't you play it for a couple minutes and tell me whether you think it's ready to ship? And they go, oh my God, no, we can't do that. You know,
that's
like,
what
people
that's
aren't.
Why I think
a couple of minutes, it was all spent on the loading screen.
So much loading. That bears mentioning. Yeah, I was watching a speedrun of this the other night. It's an hour-long speedrun for Sonic Story. 20 minutes is made up of loading screens. That is a third of the game. You're staring at a loading screen. It's really amazing.
And that's, I assume that they skip the actual quest.
If you're trying for the side quests and mini games, because Force Edit will load the conversation with the NPC who gives you your quest. Then it'll load the mini game, and if you fail, it'll load the conversation for the NPC telling you you failed, and then it'll go and load the map again.
Bringing back all kinds of good memories here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can I point out that also, this is a game where, you know, you have a time limit to get the S ranks for all this crap. The game will immediately, the moment the loading screen is done, starts the game. Instantly the time is on. You have to move the microsecond the game loads. You have to go, all right, run, now. Because otherwise, it'll be like, oh, you didn't make the time limit because you didn't go immediately.
And there's parts of the game, those mock speed sections, I guess talking about gameplay now, where just like, what if you lost all control over Sonic the Hedgehog? What if he was going at a million miles an hour?
And he had tank controls.
And had tank controls, yeah. If you could just, at that moment, all you can do is suggest what Sonic should do, and he'll just fly all over the place.
I remember, because I was playing it very recently, I was cramming as much as through, when you've got the tornado, fire tornado bit, and the camera's just like, I'm just going to change randomly back and forth, you know, front of Sonic, back of Sonic. You're not going to see the cars that are coming at you, but they're coming, and you got to dodge them. It's like, what the hell?
That part is super horrible in particular, because it uses the Havoc physics. There's all this stuff exploding, smashing into the ground. Shards fly everywhere. You can't predict where it is. It's just complete nonsense.
It's great because it's realistic. It's like a giant fire tornado is actually throwing car parts at me.
Yeah, you'd be dead in 2 seconds, just like in real life.
It really suck, just like Sonic 06.
You know, come to think of it, doesn't this make you think of a really, really horrible version of the Sonic CD special stage?
Kinda, yeah.
Yeah,
they did it way worse.
Oh, just, God, yeah.
But just to go back to quickly, when it comes to these problems, and I was saying, like, almost all the problems in this game are because they didn't have time. And what I mean is, we can talk about it, but it's hard to suggest solutions to most of the game's problems because they're all kind of obvious. It's just like, well, you shouldn't have done that. You should have fixed it. And it's like, yes, we should have fixed it, but we didn't because
broken
we didn't
games
have
shouldn't be broken.
Yeah.
Often it's something as simple as, oh, you hit the right side of this boost pad instead of the left. Well, Sonic's going to fly through the wall and die. Do the left side.
You can jump
time.
On springs in this game, and if you hold the direction, Sonic will just fall off and die. Instead of being fixed onto his path, once he hits a spring, he'll just go away and die. It's like,
and
what?
You know what probably is the worst part, though? That even if you fixed all of those glitches, you still have an extremely boring, drab, lifeless platformer.
Most of the levels are, well, yeah, one thing is they clearly went, for this one, we're going to make the levels really big because we can. And turns out that that's not interesting at all.
Oh, and it's even worse when you start playing as Silver and he's noticeably slower than Sonic and Shadow.
Yeah, at least, and this is the thing, that this bothers the hell out of me, and apparently this is, you can't do this, you can't spin dash in this game. Make a Sonic game where you have huge open areas, and you can't spin dash. You have to accelerate slowly. What?
Look, if there's one thing Sonic is all about, it's slow, steady acceleration and measured movement, right?
And the great thing about it is, when you're on the one thing in the game that you would expect to have, you know, heavy physical physics, which is the snowboarding, Sonic stops on a dime. Like, instantly. If you press backwards, he just stops.
I remember that makes no sense. There's so many different control schemes in that game. Snowboards, 4x4s in Shadow's case.
Yeah.
And Silver's
fair, view. The snowboarding segments were coded by a team of ferrets.
So,
you know, they were running behind, and they're like, look, we can't afford to hire new people. We can't afford to feed some ferrets. So, no, I mean, look, let's talk about what really matters to a Sonic game. Like, before we rank it, I mean, what is the sexy marmoset count here?
That wouldn't come till the next game. No sexy marmosets in this one.
Sexy ocelots.
Wasn't Silver going to be a squirrel or something? And they made him a hedgehog?
Is this
part of the fox family?
That sort of looks like him in an old preview of the Sonic X anime, but that's about it.
Because I thought that I read that he was not going to be a hedgehog, he was going to be a different animal. And then they're like, you know what, this franchise doesn't have enough hedgehogs, let's put in more hedgehogs.
I would have really loved a psychic, extremely whiny squirrel from the future. I just want to put that out there.
I just want more echidnas, like a couple hundred of them, maybe.
Well, you can't do that. The comic book for you, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. Ken Penders, he knew what kids wanted.
Tons of
more hedgehogs and more echidnas with dreadlocks. That's what I need.
Knuckles.
You think a game about like speedy, sassy anthropomorphic animals would just like ransack the entire animal kingdom, like at least the mammal part of it. But they don't. They really stick to the same, like, they're so scared they can't even diversify the mammal ratio here.
Yeah, that's
you know, let's on that note, let's also remember that you do actually get to play as some of Sonic's friends in this game, and they're even more broken than the hedgehogs. Like, Tails is drawing placeholder graphics instead of bombs here.
That's true. He throws these boxes and these dummy rings come out, and you try to collect them, but you can't. They just kind of bounce around. Like,
he throws his own life bar at enemies.
It could have been anything else other than rings, and they made it the most confusing thing possible.
And the great part about it is that, for reasons that I don't understand, Tails can no longer jump on enemies. If you jump on an enemy, he just gets hurt.
Again, keeping you on your toes, changing things up. That's Sonic 06.
Tails has arthritis.
He's vaguely competent alternate character to play has, and even then, well, that's only vaguely on par with Sonic and Shadow, so it's still horribly broken.
Yeah, so all the characters are kind of broken in a variety of ways. And can I say that there is a decent amount of content in this game? For all of its faults, they went, you know what, instead of scrapping levels, instead of trying to fix things, trying to make the levels that we have good, let's just make a lot of levels. Let's make a ton of levels and remix them, and I'm sure it'll work out just fine.
Just like the Sonic Adventure games, there's all these emblems to collect, medals, and the one thing that made me laugh more than anything is that it had day one DLC, and it was for a super hard mode. Like, the game wasn't hard enough.
And it will remix it. Yeah, it gets harder. They put more enemies and stuff in the stages to mess with you. And that's crazy.
That it's weird that it's such a vast game for what it is. Because, like, it really takes balls to look at something and say, like, look, we could either make a pretty decent short game and get it out on time, or we could get it out on time and make, like, the, like, War and Peace of garbage platformers.
It's so ambitious, so completely overambitious, and they just did not have the resources for it whatsoever.
Basically, there's two key elements in this game that if they weren't there, I would adore this game even though it's broken as crazy. And the two things that really mess with me, the load times are abominable. They're unforgivable. There's too many. They're too constant. They amplify your suffering in so many ways. And because the game is bugged up, you have lives, and they're pretty restrictive. You cash out your lives, and then you get booted out of the stage. And
that is so demoralizing whenever that happens, because the levels are all so long. You end up taking like 20, 25 minutes trying to get to the end. You lose your last life, you're back to the beginning. That's if you've saved.
You never feel like it's your fault. Like, you're like, oh, I hit a spring, and then the game decided that I don't go to the next spring. I go into the ground, and I die. Or you press jump on a grinding rail, and then Sonic just dies. Like, he literally can just die if you press jump at the wrong time on a grinding rail. He'll just go, and then he's dead.
The thing is, like, some problems like that, it makes me wonder whether there was, like, some rogue team member who was like, I've got to find a way of discouraging people from playing this game. Like, I've got to send the message, like, you should stop playing this game. Like, please, return it while you still can.
They can't see how broken it is at the end.
Okay, like, it's got to be worse.
So it's like, I think it's just kind of interesting because it's a game that's really hard. Because you're fighting not the enemies, but because of the engine itself. You're constantly fighting against the actual game to beat it.
It affects your play style is what it does. It forces you to be really conservative with how you play. Try not to mess things up too much.
Sonic's known Sonic for his overwhelming caution,
Exactly, yeah. You try to do anything Sonic would do, you're dead. You're dead all the time.
So special shout out to
careful Sonic,
the Eggman redesign. I know it's a controversial thing. I gotta think one thing.
You guys should, at one point, you're not busy, Google Eggman without glasses, because they modeled what he looks like without glasses, and it is horrifying.
They sure did.
Oh, God.
So, what I actually like is, I don't hate the redesign. I'm like, huh. If you want a kind of genuinely, vaguely menacing, but slightly off-kilter, goofy villain, You could do... He's the least worst thing, I think, in the game. Just, he's like, I'm evil, and I look pretty creepy walking around with my long legs and, like, beady little eyes. It's like, okay.
But now he lives in a universe that has normally proportioned humans.
Yeah, but he like, just imagine barely, when he the like...
He's like, oh my God, what happened to him?
Like, I look at him and I go, that guy, that's what happened to him. Is going to be a supervillain. That's the supervillain guy.
You know, but the thing is, it's like, certain things about this game, it's like, the day I care about the design of Dr. Robotnik is like a sad, sad day in my life story. Like, I cannot really get that upset about it. Good or bad. Like, being excited about this is just like, there are some villains that are just beneath notice. Like, who cares? Even Sonic fans don't care about this guy. Like, he's just like a thing that gets in the way of their like erotic antics, you know? Like, it doesn't, you know, it's just not, it's beside the point. Okay, we got to rank this thing.
Actually, before you do that, there is one thing that's worth noting, and that would be the fact that the soundtrack is surprisingly up to par.
It's good, yeah.
It is, actually. I kind of like the intro theme. It's got a nice, swelling, orchestrated feel to it.
They put a lot of effort into it.
You can actually stand making it to the final boss, but don't like the lyrics, there's an orchestrated version of it.
I mean, it's really cool, because when you turn on the game, and for like about 5 seconds, that intro kicks in, before you play it, you're like, alright, I'm in for an experience, it's going to be pretty good. Game dashes all hopes, but it manages to hold together for a few seconds.
That seems like a common thread running through a lot of Sonic games. It's like the music is, as far as I can recall, like usually pretty good. And sometimes it's like way better than the game.
I actually consider it's you can either call it the Sonic constant or the Sega constant. And it's no matter how bad their games get, they can usually crank out a soundtrack that is either great or interesting. It's not always both, but they're pretty good about it.
The original Sonic was sold basically on loop-de-loops and the kickin' jams. Like, that's the thing that like got my attention as a kid. Like, oh, he can do a loop-de-loop. That's really cool. And wow, this music is rad. It's just like, I just want to like break dance all over this crap. It's like, whatever the early 90s thing
you do. The production values of the FMV sequences are probably higher than anything else in the game somehow.
Enough to make the Sonic and Princess interactions really, really weird.
They outsourced it to Blur Studios, if interested. So that's why those are...
Blur does some really terrific stuff. They even like entire CG movies that look really great.
So there's definitely, you know... Those were given to someone else, and they went, all right, we'll do it, and they finished it, and wow, wouldn't it have been great if they had done that with the game.
And that just makes it extra jarring when it switches back to in-game graphics.
Because you see this
really good-looking princess, and then suddenly she just looks like crap.
We should say that, though, the somewhat realistic human character is true to the original Sonic design documents. In that, as I never tire of pointing out, like, Sonic was originally supposed to have a human girlfriend named Madonna.
Love it.
Yep. This was something they wanted to do for years.
It's like, apparently it's the Americans who freaked out at this. Yeah, but yeah.
I guess it makes some sense given, you know, this was also not long after Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Yeah, exactly. It does make sense. That's a good point. I hadn't really thought about it in that context, but really is what they were looking at.
Even further, you've got classic cartoon duos like Betty Boop and the Bimbo.
But nobody even knows who Bimbo was supposed to be.
Yeah.
Who was Betty Boop's boyfriend?
Well, okay, Betty Boop had two boyfriends. She had Coco the Clown at one point. They were dating. Whoa. And there was Bimbo the dog. Yeah.
Oh my God.
He's apparently a dog. Isn't Betty Boop supposed to be a dog? She's just a human dog?
Originally a dog, and then they redesigned her about a little bit in, and then they had to redesign her again after the motion picture code came into place, and they're like, oh, Betty Boop, you need to wear a longer dress.
Gotta cover
or America's going to die. Sorry, Betty.
Alex, you're my new best friend. The fact that you know this just makes me so happy.
I'm glad to know this now. Thank you, Alex.
Yes.
You're welcome. I actually know more about cartoons.
Definitely worth checking out if you haven't.
Technically, Popeye exists within the Betty Boop universe, the Boopiverse, as I call it. He was introduced in a Betty Boop cartoon, so I always figured like Betty Boop is like Popeye's like real girlfriend. Like,
that's for your fan fiction, I think.
Yeah.
Speaking of fan fiction, let's condemn this to the list.
One point I want to make here is that in terms of games with a budget, this has to be the worst game of all time. Like,
I was going to say the same thing. As far as budget plus final product goes, this is easily the worst.
Like, I look at the bottom of your list, I see Super Monkey Daiboken. That was probably just one guy. That was one guy with so little oversight. He put a graphic message in the game, and nobody said nothing. Like, X-Men, that's got to be a tiny contract team. This game had dozens of people with decades of experience.
Superman had the big license, so...
It's not as big of a license as it gets, though, if you think of it as that. Like, I know it's technically they own it and they didn't pay for the license, but at this point, it's kind of like a license that they don't have to pay for. They just kind of, it exists, and they have like a legacy right to it, but they don't deserve it. You know what I mean? It's like, it doesn't really belong to them. It belongs to DeviantArt or something.
When I bought this game, it was based off the fact I actually had enjoyed some of the previous early, poorly reviewed titles like Wide Oars and Shadow, and those reviews didn't do just how bad this game is justice.
Well, so this is where the game criticism, game reviewing really screwed you, because... You know, they have, like, you know, we got the 7 out of 10s and stuff. So Shadow's like, it's not a very good game, 6 out of 10. And they're like, Sonic the Hedgehog 06, it's not a very good game, 5 out of 10. No, not 5 out of 10, 2 Sonic out 06, of 10.
It kind of broke a lot of people. They didn't know how to review it. They weren't prepared for such a completely broken game.
I think a lot of the reviewers as well weren't willing to, like, they were like, this is so bad, this is the worst game I've ever played, but it can't possibly be the worst game ever, right? I must be missing something.
I mean, technically, my Xbox didn't catch fire, so how could it be a 2 out of 10?
Like, I don't want to catch shit from Sonic fans, so, you know, that probably played a factor.
Can I make one more point for you, Rank? I feel like this game kind of, in a way, had to happen. Like, even before 06, these games are steadily getting kind of worse and worse. Like, plots kept getting weird, more convoluted, kept getting more characters, didn't really do anything. They kind of kept getting buggier. I'd say this whole thing was kind of a wake-up call to that they needed to figure out what to do from here. Well, and they kind of slowly improve from Unleashed onwards, I'd say.
It's kind of like Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, the first step is admitting that you have a problem. Like, you've got to hit rock bottom at a certain point. And it's hard to argue that Sonic hasn't at least been trying really hard since this game.
Okay, so for me, between the budget, the final product, and the fact that they had the goal to kill Blaze off in it, even if it didn't stick, I'd drop it right at the bottom.
Yeah, screw that.
Yeah, same here.
Other thing that makes it hard for me to rank is I did get some enjoyment out of it.
We did, didn't we?
That's, in my opinion, is the catch with this game is that, I don't know, like, what do you want to say? Like, it's a 15-hour runtime about, unless you're crazy like Gunhut and actually try and finish it properly, but... You know, there's probably an hour or two in this game, especially in the Shadow stages, which are actually very occasionally approached being fun, that you're like, you know what? I could enjoy this too.
Shadow's not as bad as the other characters.
Yeah, those segments were actually some of the best ones, which is not saying much.
But the way Alex and I played through it is we would play all we could until we got a game over, then we'd pass off the controller. That was the only way we could tolerate this game. And the thing is, the game became fun when you watched someone else play through it and suffer. Like, they'd make the same mistakes you did, and you'd see, like, ah, yeah.
It wasn't just me. It's a very interesting shared experience, because it's like watching a Let's Play of a terrible game, except that you're, like, your husband in this case, and he keeps dying at the same thing you did, because, you know, but then you have to play, and then you have to keep dying at that thing. And it was interesting.
It's also why a small cottage industry started to spring up around Let's Players, because... There's this phenomenon where it's fun to watch this game, but not so much to play it.
Not at all.
That leaves me very conflicted here.
And it was a bonding experience for us. We definitely had a stronger relationship. All you married couples, you want to make your marriage stronger, go get Sonic 06 and you both play it together. You will come out the other end just super strong.
That's some unbreakable bonds right there.
Actually, please don't do that.
The only reason my wife hasn't murdered me yet is because I don't make her play games like that. Like, I am really trying hard to live a nice, long, full life, and I just don't feel like pushing it, you know? Like,
true. So maybe not with this
one. Maybe not this one, but, you know.
That's the tough aspect with this one, in the sense that, because our friend Satanga is in here. I know he hates the idea of so bad it's good games, or games that are unintentionally good because they're bad. But it is a question of whether you have this element where it's like, you can find enjoyment, even though clearly what they wanted you to do was sit down, play the game, be like, I'm enjoying this game because it's fun. Not, I'm enjoying this game because
I refuse to believe that the people who made this game wanted people to play it. I feel like they just wanted it to go away.
Well, so they didn't patch it after release to fix a lot of the problems. That's one of my big check marks against the game, is they had time, once it was out, to deliver patches and say, we have repaired the game a little bit. And they were like, nope, never looking at that again. Eat it, fans.
Yep, everyone just wished it was over by the end, I'm sure.
So bad it's a good aspect really should apply here, because, well, I can speak personally that any enjoyment I might have gotten was probably Stockholm Syndrome by the end.
Oh yeah, it's painful for sure. I would never be able to play through the whole game solo. It's just miserable.
It's just so damn long.
Yeah, it never stops.
Also, we've got Sonic Boom now, which is like a much more entertaining Terrible Sonic game.
It is.
Like the gifts from that game alone are almost worth the price of admission. They're so funny.
Like Sonic Boom is so much more playable
for no reason. It's really fun to watch, and this game can't even suck in an entertaining way. Like it just
it
can suck out your soul.
Yeah.
You want to object to placing it at the bottom?
No, I think that the bottom is reserved for uniquely awful games. It's uniquely awful, I guess, for a Sonic game. But
here's my suggestion, real quick.
Okay,
above Superman 64.
I can live with that. I can live with
mostly because it has better music.
It is kind of like Superman 64 in the sense that it takes a super popular character and just soaks it in urine. Like it's just worthless at the end of it. Okay. It's just like I don't care about this.
You know what the main thing is,
the soundtracks.
The main thing is that I don't think this game makes Sonic, Shadow, or Silva feel like they're just completely impotent. You know, you're still like, yeah, I'm fast, I can kill enemies. Like, they managed to just barely get that right. Whereas Superman 64, you're just like, I'm Superman and I get killed by a guy punching me. Like, forget that. You know, forget that noise.
Yeah. Okay, so putting it above Superman?
I would.
Below Super Monkey Daiboken?
It seems about right. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe above Super Monkey Daiboken? That game's pretty dire.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah, Super Monkey Daiboken is like fascinatingly dire. You know, like it's
so Sonic 06.
Super Monkey Daiboken, as we said, probably had like 1.5 people working on it, and they turned out a game that was probably as competent as Sonic 06. I mean, what do you want from these two?
They both had long load times.
Hey, yeah.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Yeah. Okay. I don't really care anymore. So
no one cares about Sonic 06.
I'm going to put above.
I've spent too much time thinking and talking about this, and I really need to stop. So wherever you want to put it, Bob. Looks like it's going right below Meek the Cat, right above Super Monkey Daiboken.
I can agree with that.
Nobody that sounds like the perfect place.
That's fair.
Can we arrange a witch hunt for null 0x_000xox or whatever? Just end his wretched life, because he didn't have to do this.
It was done.
But we had to rank it because it was part of a 5-star Stitcher review, and we love those people who leave us the sweet, honey-like 5-star review. Okay, we're done. I'm going to end this recording and possibly kill myself. I don't know.
Listeners, this is Mike, the real-life alter ego of Satanga, and the self-admitted weakest link of TG47K's regulars. But if you don't think I'm publicly dragging down the quality of the podcast, then hear me out. I've been writing for Hardcore Gaming 101 since I was in high school, and I'm proud to see the site flourish. But it could always use more help for the benefit of its creator, Kurt, especially since he's paying us for these episodes now. If you want to get more incentive for Xerxes, Cal, Bobinator, our editor Jeff, and myself, along with our other friends and guests to put on the best damn show we can, make a pledge at www.patreon.com/HG101. If John Madden gets paid to say obvious things about sports, shouldn't we get rewarded for babbling about video games? If you agree, that's www.patreon.com/HG101. Thank you, and peace forever!
The next game we're going to be talking about, in quotation marks, is Rising Zan : The Samurai Gunman, which was nominated by @Shinyun226 on Twitter. It was developed by UEP Systems and published by Age Tech in the United States and UEP Systems in Japan. For the PlayStation, the original, earliest release date and territory is March 25th, 1999 in Japan. And I will cede the floor to anybody who has played and understands this game, because I
so sick
don't.
Of you.
I've played this all the way to level game. 5. And yeah. This is probably the epitome of a cool concept ruined by the hold well and then ability to design around it.
Well, I mean, the big part of this game is that it is a PlayStation 1 3D game that is clearly pretty experimental in terms of they took what is essentially a beat-em-up and kind of splashed in some like hack-and-slash tending towards something more like Devil May Cry, which obviously didn't exist yet.
Well, the hack-and-slash or spectacle fighter, or whatever you want to call it, hadn't really been invented yet when this came out. So yeah, it's like technically the classic arcade beat-em-up, but with more of a 3D twist to it. So it ends up looking superficially like a Devil May Cry style game, but in practice is more like this janky, really poorly thought out action platform. This game is just so hard to describe because it looks almost like a Devil May Cry game, but
you know, okay, there's an old story about Steve Jobs and Apple. And he saw, I think it was, like, Xerox demonstrating an OS, you know, way back in the, a billion years ago. And he thought he saw a feature in that OS, which I think was window over window. So he demanded that the Mac OS they were working on had window over window. But Xerox didn't have window over window. He just demanded it and forced the engineers to put in this incredibly difficult thing. To me, that's what Rising Xan is. You look at it and go, oh my goodness, it's Devil May Cry. Wow, it's Devil May Cry on the PlayStation. But when you actually examine it, you're like, wait, it's not Devil May Cry. It only kind of looks like it. And if you were to copy it superficially, you would actually end up with a much better game. But when you play the game, it's like, oh, no, that's
yeah.
That's
it really feels like a prototypical Devil May Cry from what I played. You got the melee mixed with ranged attacks, but it's on PS1, so the lock-on doesn't quite work. The
camera's real mess. That's, like, the biggest problem.
Yeah,
the camera is probably one of the worst on the PlayStation. trying to accomplish.
And keeping in mind, this is a platform that had floating runner, floating jumper, jumping floater? Whatever, it has floating that game runner. On it.
Yeah.
That game is bad camera controls.
Like, okay, there's one thing I know about Rising Xan. It's by Web Systems, who previously did the Cool Borders series. And as far as I know, that's all they did back then. So from what I can tell, they went from snowboarding sims to action platformer parody, whatever Rising Xan is supposed to be.
Does that kind of thing make sense when you think that when you get developers who massively shift genre, they're really going to bring like a new energy to it? Like, we have no idea what we're doing, so we're just going to make something completely different. Was it Bizarre Software, Bizarre Games or something? They did a bunch of racing games, and then they did The Club, which is obviously
Bizarre Creations.
Yeah, Bizarre Creations. And so The Club feels unlike any other third-person shooter, because they basically brought their experience of racing games into shooters, and they made a weird little game. So it makes sense that you would go, well, we've got this like Cool Borders superficial sort of thing, and we're going to kind of shift that into making a weird homage game, which makes Rising Xan very interesting. It's a really cool game to experience, even if it's not great, and it's got weird things like special moves that are kind of directional based on Xan, and it's really awkward to use them because you kind of got to...
The inputs you're given will always work no matter which way Xan is facing. He'll just execute them in the direction he's currently facing. So, like, if you try to use the thrust attack, but he's facing left, you still have to press up on the control pad twice.
See, can I say that that's incredibly confusing?
Yes, it's very confusing.
So, the other thing about this game, it has a cool aesthetic, which is a bit weird, because it's called Rising Xan, the Samurai Gun Man... Man, people, Xan, man, they rhyme. What it has is it kind of like pretends to be like a Western cowboy, Wild West sort of thing, but it's just full of Japanese iconography. Like, there's almost nothing but Japanese.
It feels like an adaptation of a manga series that doesn't exist.
It also feels kind of silly by design. Like, they know it's over the top. They know it's ridiculous.
The main character calls himself the Super Ultra Setsu Hero.
Mm-hmm. Multiple
times. His theme song sung by Hironobu Kageyama, even though
what I really like is that the U.S. version has its own theme song. Yeah. And for me, it sounds like something that comes like late 90s action TV, like something like right out of something that would play along Xena or Hercules, and I love it.
It definitely feels incredibly lost in translation, but I don't think it would, like, I'm sure if you played it in Japan, you'd be like, I have no idea what this is.
Absorbing, the voice acting is the same in both countries.
Because it uses Banjo-Kazooie kind of just noise grunts, correct?
Actually, that's the real thing. Only the enemies talk like that. The main characters all speak English.
So,
thing where the Japanese bad guys speak complete gibberish, even though it's a Japanese game.
I actually, just for fun, I dug out the descriptions of some of the things from the manual. I guess it's the English manual, I don't know if this is the Japanese one, but I want to read you, just to get a sense of this game. The entry for Johnny's gun, he has a gun. Sorry, not Johnny, Zan's gun. The gun, his gun, is called Johnny No More. That's the name of his gun in the English version. And
good
here's
gun name.
Here's the description of his gun. Zan's father, Kevin, had this gun specifically made and presented Johnny with it on his birthday. Soon after that, Kevin was killed by an unknown force. The 56mm revolver/rifle composite is so powerful that a normal person would be shattered attempting to fire it. It uses its own unlimited bullets and all the special ammo Zan picks up in the game. Zan calls his gun Johnny No More. That's...
Wow.
Dad gave him a dangerous gun. Wow. Not very safe, I'm just saying.
Shatter your wrist. Wow.
That's it shatters that an entire cool person if you try and fire it.
He's carrying like a howitzer with him?
There is this one really cool animation I'm surprised I haven't seen used elsewhere. In fact, I think the manga Black Cat is the only other place I've seen this done, but that's the idea of having a character deflect ranger attacks by swatting them with their gun.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, Zan has, he has that. He has, like, a cool deflection system, which I guess we didn't mention yet, that a lot of projectiles in this game can be flung back. Which, what is that, like, proto-Vanquish now?
I guess so. Yeah, they had a bunch of ideas in there that were iterated on later on. Just, again, all in prototypical form.
And even the kind of game itself, there's a lot of, I am pretty damn sure that the... someone, maybe Mikami, maybe not, but someone on God Hand team played this game. I would be so absolutely shocked if they hadn't, because just the sort of wacky style that this game has is almost identical to a lot of the things that God Hand likes to do, including arbitrary quick time events, button mashing scenes. There's really comical stuff that just feels
God Hand. That's one thing I want to mention real quick. There are a lot of concepts in this game that I feel don't really go anywhere. Like, you've got, like, ranking. It's not really clear how you improve it or what getting a good ranking does. You've got all the random QuickTime events. You've got the weird button-mashing minigame after every boss that you don't really know how to do or what doing well at that actually does. There's just, like, a lot of ideas they thought they were cool they didn't really know what to do with, I'd say.
Also, in the manual, one of the enemies is just called Green Ninja.
He doesn't get a name.
No,
he's Green Ninja.
He's Green Ninja.
The game does have a lot of charm. It makes me curious about what there is later on in the game, but not quite curious enough to actually play through to get that far.
The Hell Train level, which is level 4, features a fixed perspective camera, drew several parts of it, and it plays so much better with it.
The game really does feel like it desperately needed Devil May Cry 1 style, just fixed camera angles, don't confuse us out.
Even something like the belt-scrolling perspective that Dreads of Fate used, or the overhead look that Brave Fencer Musashi had, all of the best hack and slash games on the PlayStation tend to have a fixed camera.
Do you think we're ready to rank this, or is there anything else we need to say?
Well, the only thing I've got is that this game reminds me vaguely of Gun Gage as well, in just it's a weird kind of genres that would later be explored by better games, essentially. Basically, and Gun Gage has behind the back the whole time, which I think would have actually worked better as well.
There's actually a PS2 game I keep meaning to try, I haven't gone around yet, called Samurai Western, and you're probably better off playing that game instead.
That one is definitely more samurai than western, admittedly. It does not actually have any gunplay mechanic.
What's interesting about samurai western is it's essentially the complete opposite, right? Instead of it being an incredibly sort of... You play as, like, in this sort of Japanese-ified western Wild West, you play as a samurai in the Wild West, the actual Wild West, if I remember how that game plays out correctly. So there are interesting kind of takes on the exact same idea, but in the complete opposite direction, which is cool.
That said, well, it is by the same developers as the Way of the Samurai series. It plays completely differently. Instead, it's a level-based action game.
In some ways, that's better, because the Way of the Samurai games can get so overwrought with, like, their little complexities in the way those games are. They're very difficult games to consume. Okay, I don't think anyone's going to say much more about Rising Zan.
I hope not.
I can't say much more, no. Sorry.
I'm thinking more like the Revolution X range.
Well, it's worse than Revolution X, and I'll tell you why. Revolution X is just bonkers, insane, crazy.
It's pretty bonkers, insane, crazy. All the things.
Does this game have Aerosmith's Joe Perry badly reading lines about "You gotta save the revolution, save the music"?
It
is not better than Mega Man Zero 2.
I gotta agree with that. I wouldn't even say it's better than Glover. Would you?
I think Glover is less successfully executed. Where Glover falls apart is actually the game itself. It's got, like, a lot of charm in it. I think Zan experiments with a lot more ideas and succeeds more with a lot more ideas. It's just not...
It's a pretty good idea, though.
Yeah, it's a pretty good idea. So Zan. Zan has got a dozen different proto-elements that games, like, a decade later would really just be running wholesale with, which is cool.
So, between Mega Man Zero 2 and the Glover, then?
How about between Glover and Gamola Speed?
Bob wants to put it above.
That's how I feel. I mean, I hesitate to even put it above Altered Beast, because Altered Beast has, like, werewolves and bears and crap like that, and it's like...
Altered Beast is... It does exactly what it wants to do almost perfectly. Altered Beast is flawless, it's just not very good.
Yeah, that's true. It's like, it can't be better at what it does, but it also can't be a better game. Like, it is kind of stuck being, like, Altered Beast. Okay, I can live with that. Between Mega Man Zero 2 and Glover?
Oh, you moved it up? Or have you...
I'm okay with...
I mean, I'm sorry. No. That's not true. Between Glover and Gomoro Speed.
That's where it is.
I guess right. It, too, can ride the ball centipede.
Ride the ball centipede. Straddle the ball centipede.
Straddle the ball centipede. Correcting me.
Have the Retro Pals that tried Gomoro Speed?
We have streamed Gomoro Speed. That is a weird
excellent
game. Could not wrangle that snake. Just couldn't do it.
It hurts your fingers, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah, you're always just wiggling around in a circle trying.
It really hurt my thumb. Like, it's my problem is I put like a death grip on my controller whenever I play any game forever. And that really hurts with Gomoro Speed.
You need to be careful, or you'll get horrible wrist injuries like me.
I can't stop. I can't stop. I tried.
Stop everything playing Gomoro Speed. Put it down right now.
Everything I do is maximum power. Everything.
I wonder if anyone filed a lawsuit over that game, like Mario Party.
No, but I think Xerxes just secretly revealed that he actually wears the power glove 24/7.
Wow, what an incredible episode. That was so much fun. You know what? The party's over. The party's over if you're not a Patreon donor. But if you are, what you would be hearing right now is me and the boys making some noise about Broforce. That's right. We're talking about Broforce, the ultimate brotastic, super in-your-face, I don't know, Dig Dug? I don't know what else to compare it to. Like... Contra Doug.
Punch those walls.
Yeah. Super 80s-ified, in-your-face, freedom fries, loving...
There's an eagle.
There's eagles everywhere, really. Yeah, all over the place. You fight
aliens. There's so many eagles, it's Nazi Germany. Like, yeah!
Yeah! Hold on. More American than Nazi Germany. Oh.
Yeah!
Never mind. Forget that. Forget I said that. But yeah, you'll be hearing that, and it's awesome. We do bonus rankings for the Patreon version. Only Patreon donors can find it and listen to it. But you know what? You know how much it costs you to be a Patreon donor and get these free podcasts?
How much? As little as
$1 a month, Cal. As little as $1 American.
I've thrown away more money by accident than a dollar.
Right, yeah. Like, Australian dollars, I guess that's what, like $19? I don't know. But, $1 American, it costs almost nothing. And you get all the bonus content for the podcast. I think for $5, you get all the PDF versions of the books. Maybe not. I think that tier has gone up a little bit. But
more
still,
books, so it costs more.
Pretty good, yeah. I mean, we just had a great... HG101 book come out, Contra and other Konami classics. Features an article by yours truly. Probably features one by Bobinator, right?
More than one, I believe.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, for sure. So it's awesome. And there's many more awesome stuff, many more awesome things you can get from the HG101 Patreon. You should donate. But yeah, you know, so the party doesn't have to stop. The party can keep on raging, but only if you give a little bit of money to patreon.com/HG101. That's all for this episode of Hardcore Gaming 101's Top Games Podcast. Special thanks goes out to Shinyun226 on Twitter and at null_0x00 on Stitcher. That screen name is unreadable. Null0x00. Thank you guys for nominating those games, and thanks as well to those of you we haven't gotten to yet. We're trying to get to everybody, and we hope to get to you soon if we haven't done so already. Thanks also to my lovely co-host and compatriots, our special guest for this episode, and to our editor Jeff Rude and our theme song composer Muteki and our technical assistant video editor and script writer Bobinator. And thanks, of course, to the support and feedback of listeners like you. You can support this podcast by making a small monthly donation at patreon.com/HG101. I know I did. And you can help us out by subscribing to the HG101 YouTube channel and following GC9X and at HG_101 on Twitter. But most importantly, help us claw our way into the podcasting firmament by getting on iTunes, subscribing to HG101, and giving us a sweet, sweet 5-star review. Do it, or I'll never get to become a super ultra sexy hero. I think that's probably not what's stopping me, but you know, I'll blame it on you. Until next week, keep keeping it real.